Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that's always pre-taped. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, doing it live, is Tyler Ward. Tyler, how's it going?
I'm doing it live, baby. It's the only way to do it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I don't have the heart to tell you that there's no way you can be doing it live, since the people listening to this are going to be listening to this not long after, but after we've recorded it. But that's okay.
Andrew, you breaking kayfabe on me right now?
Right now I am, although later we're going to hop in the Kayfabe 520, which I feel like we haven't been in so long.
We have been a while. I had to make sure that it was sanitized and deloused. Make sure there was no COVID presence within the kayfabe.
Make sure it was WHO approved.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this is like 4 months now of us going on COVID.
Oh my God, is it that long?
I think it's that long.
It definitely feels longer, and I'm sure myself and all the listeners will agree that it feels longer, but
yeah, it certainly does feel longer. I want to share one interesting news thing I saw right before we started recording that I find kind of fun and positive, which I'm going to share before we, for two episodes in a row, we're going to be starting the show with like negative stuff. I saw that Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the long half kayfabe, half not, pro wrestling magazine that does the annual
quick side note. I just recently heard PWI described as the New Yorker of pro wrestling.
Oh, that's really good. I like that. Well, the New Yorker of pro wrestling, PWI, who does the annual PWI 500 lists, just announced today that they are no longer going to do a men's and women's list. They're going to do just a genderless top 500.
Okay,
so there you go. Becky Lynch is probably like, well, thanks a lot, because I would have been the number one pro wrestler of the year had you made this decision last year. But
well, she's still got a chance.
not this year.
Not this year, but
but next year she's got a shot. So there's been two kind of big news moments in pro wrestling since our last episode, and I think that we literally in the last episode were like, well, unless there's something that causes us to have to do an emergency episode, you won't hear from us for a bit.
Yeah.
And then all this news broke like 2 hours later after we recorded it. but we didn't have the heart to do the episode then. I'm kind of happy we've taken a little bit of time to let it happen. So 2 weeks ago, hashtag speaking out was the big news in pro wrestling, and it started with allegations of sexual harassment against British independent wrestler David Starr, and then the hashtag speaking out gained a lot of traction, and many people within the professional wrestling world, both male and female, shared their experiences of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and rape coming from others within the pro wrestling community. There were a number of allegations made at wrestlers with profiles, both large and small. Sadly, we don't have the time to go and name every single one of them because the problem was that prevalent.
It was an extensive list, yes.
Yeah. A few that I'm going to touch on just because, for the most part, they were acted upon. WWE released Jack Gallagher, who was accused of rape. They also released Travis Banks and El Ligero, who were accused of sexual misconduct. Both Matt Riddle and Velveteen Dream had notable accusations of rape and sexual comments made against minors, respectively. WWE has made statements that they're looking into those matters specifically. Impact cut ties with Joey Ryan, who, you know, this is an editorial opinion, but I think he probably had the biggest number of accusations of anybody. Yeah, yeah. Is that fair to say?
Definitely the largest number. The last I heard was, I think, 15 and counting, which is just horrific.
Mm-hmm. And this was multiple unwanted sexual advances and abuses of power. Impact also released David Crist for abuse of power, and they cut ties with Michael Elgin and their world champion Tessa Blanchard, who their issues we've mentioned on this program before, although I will note that it doesn't seem that Tessa's release was actually due to all of the social things regarding to her.
Yeah.
It seemed more like she was refusing to kind of was like refusing to continue to work for them is in Mexico. Then you've also got AEW suspending both Jimmy Havoc and Sammy Guevara for accusations of rape, physical abuse, and psychological abuse in the case of Jimmy Havoc, and Sammy Guevara suspended for making comments on a podcast where he said he wanted to, quote, rape Sasha Banks, end quote. NWA Vice President Dave Lagana, who was a WWE employee for a long time, if that name sounds familiar to you, he resigned after allegations surfaced about him. Shakara, which has been a family-friendly, cartoonish kind of pro-wrestling independent for a long time, they seem like they are shutting their doors after mass accusations of abuses of power within their school and their promotion. Ring of Honor booker and big star Marty Scurll had a number of accusations of sexual misconduct brought against him. No word yet from Ring of Honor about what they're going to do in regards to that. So that was a lot.
Huh.
There's a lot of people, and the accusations, and I'm only saying that to give people the benefit of the doubt, I guess, or because I don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I've heard from some other wrestling podcasts and news outlets that until either their company or their representation or something like that has like an official statement or an official reaction to it, like, kind of just best to leave it, I guess, as is, which is not the ideal situation, but here's where we are.
Yeah. I'll say I'm going to call them allegations because of trying to be fair. Although personally, I will say that with a lot of these people, there was a lot of smoke, and it's my belief that when there's smoke, there's usually at least some fire.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the responses from these organizations to hashtag speaking out?
I think that personally, and again, I can't speak for everyone on how they feel on this situation, but personally, I think their response in releasing people who, you know, the smoke is undeniable at this point, to make a reference there. I think that's clearly the right move. Something that I would like to happen, but I am not in the slightest surprised that it hasn't happened, is that I would like to see some of these promotions, you know, acknowledge this movement on air.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that it hasn't happened, but it would be nice to know that they are taking it seriously. And I think by, you know, kind of acknowledging that this is something that's happening, and this is finally getting the spotlight that it needs. I don't know. I think it would be the right choice for some promotions. Again, I'm not surprised it hasn't happened, but
yeah.
What do you think on that?
That's it's an interesting way that you talked about it there. Cause you're right. I didn't even for one second even consider that they would announce it on air.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking about, it's just,
what's the right way to do that? Like, how do you, cause you're on air product, you, it has this idea, obviously, of kayfabe and stuff, and you don't, how do you bring that up? Like, I get it. It's like the biggest minefield to navigate in the correct way, but I still think it's something that needs to be done.
I mean, I think that you should have had, in terms of WWE, you should have had either Triple H or Vince McMahon come on before the show starts.
Maybe not Vince.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, the person who's in charge should kind of have the ownership here.
I was gonna say maybe not Vince, just that he doesn't have the best history and treatment of women as well.
Oh, of course. But I would have more respect for the company if they said on screen, like, hey, we understand in the wake of hashtag speaking out happening and, you know, things coming to light about abuse of power in our entire industry, that we are going to pledge to do better. Like, that's really all that they have to say right now. And the fact they haven't said it is really loud to me.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that they are releasing people who it seems like these accusations are more than accusations. But I am saddened that it does seem that the bigger star you are, the more leeway they're giving people. Like, they're willing to fire people who have sexually abused or raped other human beings. They are less willing to do it to their stars.
Yeah.
That's the impression I get. Again, like, I can't speak to everything happening in the lives of Matt Riddle and Velveteen Dream, but, like, the issues with Velveteen Dream grooming people who are not of age online is something that's been pretty well documented for the last few months. I don't know. I just don't see the value in keeping either him or Riddle over the value in getting rid of them.
I can see how, for WWE, it's the sense of weighing, you know, already the amount of time or money that they've put into these performers and thinking, you know, could this blow over? Could it possibly, you know, something else come up that proves their innocence or something like that? So I get the issues of what they're probably debating about, but it's also just not a good look that Matt Riddle debuts on the main roster like two days after this.
At the very least, they could have not had him debut. Like that was really tasteless to me. I just don't feel good about it. I feel like they have shown their hand that they're more interested in a financial investment than doing what is right for the safety and health of their employees, which we're going to get into more in a second. I will say I liked AEW's move of suspending Sammy Guevara and saying, you know, we're going to give him sensitivity training and we're going to donate his missed pay to like a women's shelter.
Yeah.
I believe is where they're donating. I'm like, that's a really good thing to do. I don't know if I feel as good about them suspending Jimmy Havoc, honestly. The reports, the like firsthand accounts of the stuff that he did is really shocking. And I understand that he is someone who maybe has more, like, does need mental health. I just don't see a world in where he does need mental health assistance, but he also has done illegal, you know, terrible things. You can do both. You could both fire him and pay for him to get help. Mental health. I just don't see a world in where him coming back on AEW television would be advantageous for their image.
Yeah.
Are there other ways that you'd like to see this issue of abuse in pro wrestling writ large? Like, how do we get rid of this? Because it seems like it's really baked into the history. I mean, we knew about the history of, like, Fabulous Moolah basically being a pimp and, like, under the guise of being a wrestling teacher. And a lot of these stories and accusations are coming from people who are like students to other wrestlers in wrestling schools. Like that was really alarming to me how many of them were that kind of abuse of power. How would you like to see this like regulated or changed?
This is
not to put it all on you.
I was going
to
say, this is way out of my pay grade. I think the small steps that need to be happened at the beginning are like, these small steps are the way to start to get change, you know, and that means acknowledging it, you know, for the people who it's clear that they did something horrible, you know, removing them and holding them accountable is the way to go. But again, I have no idea the best answer to this, but I think getting some sort of public acknowledgement from the company itself, it would go a very long way.
Yeah. And I guess they have publicly acknowledged them through statements on like Twitter, but that I agree with you that like a on-air acknowledgement is going to be way more valuable. So to move on, I guess, although I encourage everyone to, if this is news to you, hearing us talk about this, just search pro wrestling hashtag speaking out, and I encourage you to read up on all of this and see everyone who is involved. Just fair warning that a lot of the reads are really graphic. Something else about WWE's public image is their response to COVID. It has come to light in the last week or two that there have been many positive tests at the WWE Performance Center, as many cases as 30, according to multiple sources, including Bleacher Report today. Various dirt sheet reporters have anonymous roster sources saying that they're very upset with the lack of care given to testing and that mass testing has not actually happened until the past 2 weeks. WWE finally implemented a face mask rule for people who are not directly, you know, in the ring during a match. And they finally started doing testing beyond temperature tests. Reportedly, you know, according to these sources, again, Kevin Dunn, who is the kind of behind the scenes editing live stage manager of WWE and has been for a long time, he made it a point not to allow people to wear masks on camera. Sources also told Dave Meltzer that WWE was upset at Renee Young for announcing that she had the virus over Twitter, and that no WWE executives called to check on her health. So, here's the big question that all of this raises. And, you know, again, some of this is like hard reported and some of this is soft reported. So again, like these could be half truths. Does WWE care enough about the health of their employees?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, no. If it was any indication before even COVID happened, the fact that WWE wrestlers don't have health insurance provided by the company. So I think it's been blatantly obvious for a very long time that they don't really care that much about the health of their employees, so much so that they don't even really call them employees. They're independent contractors, which again makes no sense. But yeah, so this is just another unfortunate chapter in that story.
I think it's most telling that a lot of the bigger stars in WWE right now are the ones sitting out voluntarily.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, and that's also a very, not great magnifying glass to put on the company and to see that they're the hierarchy of people who actually can choose to protect themselves and their family, and then people who don't have that luxury.
Yeah. I'm hoping, I'm optimistic that in the context of pro wrestling, that the pandemic will force a change in WWE to focus more on the health of their employees, and maybe they'll get some kind of health care. This has been incredibly disappointing to me as a fan of WWE. That they have been ignorant to not that they it seems like they've actively decided to focus more of their energy and effort on making the show go on rather than questioning if they should make the show go on. And I will be really open about the fact that I have been having like a crisis of conscience. And I feel like I've had to I've sent you a bunch of like messages, and I feel bad that I've unloaded on you, Tyler. But that I am having a hard time committing to watching WWE programming right now. We started this podcast two and a half years ago now to try to be a gateway to other fans of art and culture, to be like, wrestling is an artistic cultural event that's worth praising. And I feel like in the 2.5 years that we've started this, we've, even though we don't want to be a show about like current events, we've really been forced into talking about a lot of stuff. You know, so in the last year, WWE has taken money from a dictator who literally murdered a American journalist like that. Like this isn't really me putting an editorial spin on it. Like that is a thing that happened.
It's a fact.
It's also a fact that they didn't test their wrestlers for the virus. They tested them for flu-like symptoms.
Yep.
And they, it seems that it is a fact that they also, when their wrestlers took preventative care, like wearing masks, they said, no, take those off. So it's really hard for me to continue to ask the new fans, the people our podcast is for, to appreciate wrestling as an art and culture worth diving into if there is still so much neglect at the top, at the industry leader. So I'm going to continue to do this show and like report on stuff, but I can't say that I'm ready to like be watching all WWE programming right now.
I mean, honestly, I agree wholeheartedly with that. To be fair, I mean, the entire COVID era of wrestling, and I'm so upset that that's a thing. Like the entire COVID era of wrestling has been very difficult for me to watch, period, whether it be WWE, AEW, what have you. And it's just because it feels such a like a far cry from normal wrestling that we're used to. And there's the underlying layer of I don't know if this is safe for them to be wrestling like this, especially in those early weeks when quarantine started and the like the entire country, the entire world was in lockdown basically, but we were still seeing these people wrestling and not adhering to social distancing and stuff weekly. It was not the best feeling to watch it. So
yeah,
it's tough, man. It's a very weird time in wrestling. Weird time in wrestling.
I guess I give them a little bit more benefit of the doubt at the early stuff because because everyone was ignorant.
Exactly.
There still was so much.
There's a lot people didn't know.
Yeah. Now it's unforgivable.
Yeah.
Or for like the last like 2 months, really, like from like Backlash on, it's been kind of unforgivable to not protect your employees.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's where we're at. So we're going to try our best to continue to give you reasons and things to appreciate about wrestling, but we are going to acknowledge when it fails. And it certainly has been failing a lot as of late.
Yes.
So,
but it's, you know, it's a lot, you know, failing can happen, of course, but it's a lot easier to not fail when you can edit things.
Oh man, what a segue.
And that can only happen, my friend, with a good old-fashioned pre-tape.
Yeah. So that is our word of the day, is pre-tape. Tyler, do you want to transition us into into a different
section
of the podcast? Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back to the original goal of this podcast. We are here to explain the wild world of professional wrestling to you. Mm-hmm. And today's word is going to be a pre-tape. Pre-tape, ladies and gentlemen, a segment of the show or entire program that is recorded before its intended release, allowing for changes through editing and retapes.
Yeah. So this is different from the way that most pro wrestling is consumed, which is live. Mm-hmm. But live entertainment institutions always kind of have room for pre-tapes. I think of like when you think of like live programming, entertainment programming, I feel like a lot of people think of Saturday Night. So, oh man, I can't speak. They think of Saturday Night Live first, yep. I think. Mm-hmm. And they certainly have some of their most popular stuff have been pre-tapes because all of the digital shorts,
yep.
That like Andy Samberg started are pre-tapes. Mm-hmm. All their fake commercials are pre-tapes and stuff like that. And wrestling has for a long time, I think, used the pre-tape to similar effect.
Yes.
I think of people like Chris Jericho in the 90s really like using off-site pre-tapes. There's the one where he's just going around DC and WCW and like everything we've talked about with the 24/7 title back in the day, yep. of like having matches at you know, like playhouses and Chuck E. Cheese's and mm-hmm. stuff like that are pre-tapes.
The immediate thing that just came to my mind was Stone Cold and Booker T like battling in a Kroger or something.
In the grocery store, yeah.
Yeah.
Clean up an aisle, jackass.
So great.
Is, yeah. So the pre-tape has really always kind of added an extra bit of spice on top of wrestling as a presentation, yes. and mm-hmm. it's used as a way to break up the monotony of always seeing the same setting for the mm-hmm. show, right? Like, you may be like, we might be in the Prudential Center this week, or we might be in Madison Square Garden, yeah. But it's always going to look like, you know, a ramp in an arena going to the ring. So the pre-tape allows you to add different slug lines to get like a script kind of comp in there. Like, it allows you different scenery. And I think that's really necessary in keeping a show fresh. What is the reason, though, Tyler, that we decided to talk about pre-tapes today?
Well, the main reason is it's we figured this was very topical. Because,
we're not going to spoil it.
Yes, but most recently... to their credit, WWE had a pre-tape for NXT, specifically their title match between Adam Cole and Keith Lee.
On night two of Great American Bash.
On night two, yes. Mm-hmm. That unfortunately was spoiled via social media, mm-hmm. Which, again, I don't want to spoil it either. But
yeah, we're not going to say who won the match, right? But like, it is out there if you really want to know.
Yes, you can find it. But it was spoiled on social media by NXT developmental talent. I'm gonna butcher this guy's
yeah,
name.
This is why
Sarav Gurjar.
Yeah, I think you're probably close.
Okay. Another NXT wrestler suggested that two endings were actually filmed to prevent spoilers. So it's possible that like maybe what they said the spoiler is isn't actually going to happen, but mm-hmm. who knows?
Yeah. What do you think the chances are of that being true, that they actually filmed two endings? Or do you think that that's saving face?
I think I mean, I definitely 100% I think that's just them like throwing that out there to not have it completely ruined for people.
Yeah.
But if they did actually film two endings, like, honestly, I can't fault them for it.
In the current time we are, the like having people in the ring longer. I get what you're saying, but yeah, I'm saying
in 2020 and the social media age and stuff, I actually think it's a good idea to film multiple endings, because with social media has changed so many facets of our life, professional wrestling being one of them, in that now results and things can be posted in seconds after it's happened, minutes after it's happened, and then that information is released to the entire world, and it circulates so much quicker than it did before. I was going to say that wrestling having live broadcasts and stuff, like back in the 90s, it was great to be able to view it live and stuff, but had they not aired it live, it wasn't that detrimental back then, because there was no social media, there was no real like internet way for the spoilers to get out quickly enough, so it was kind of okay. But in 2020, like, it's not a bad idea.
No, not at all. And it's interesting that for like newer fans, they might be shocked to hear that weekly live wrestling is still pretty young compared to like the number of years that pro wrestling has been along. That like pay-per-views pretty much were always live, but up until, you know, the beginnings of the Monday Night War, Raw was still half taped and half live. They would do two shows at once, and then so like one would go live, and then the next show they would have a week off. And you're right that like if you wanted to have something spoiled about that second show in the early 90s when the internet was still starting, you just like the only way it was going to be spoiled is if like your friend Jimmy went to the show and then came back and like told you like, hey, here's what's going to happen next week. Where now, like, you can't really, WWE doesn't even really attempt to do on air live surprises really anymore, because, you know, if the Undertaker is coming back and it's supposed to be a surprise, someone's going to see him at the airport and tweet a photo of him, and then it's ruined. So they tend to spoil their own surprises now, and they'll announce like, hey, this surprising thing is going to happen. But they did not want this particular surprise of the result of this big match. They did not want that aired, I believe. Because it's been interesting. It has been like going back to the dark ages in COVID, because with the audiences being closed, you can pre-tape things and it's harder for it to leak out.
Unless one of your developmental employees posts.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think the chances are that we get a different ending in the broadcast on NXT this week than what was in this photograph?
Honestly, I'd say it's like 25% chance they change it.
That's pretty high, honestly.
It's pretty high. Like, I think there's a possibility. It depends how negative this spoiler was taken. Like, and again, I don't think that they would have gone back to film something else. Like, whatever they filmed at the time of the match is what they got. I don't think they would have gone back like in the last couple of days and be like, all right, we need to film a new ending. I don't think that would happen. So it's just a matter of like, did they film two endings? So.
Yeah. I'm trying to, in my mind, be like devil's advocate and say like, okay, in the world where they are going to change the ending tomorrow, what had to lead to them doing that? And I think it's that, you know, it's not really a secret that the announcement a few weeks ago of like, hey, all of a sudden NXT for 2 weeks is going to be the Great American Bash. We're going to put on supercards. Like it's very clearly a reaction to AEW's Fighter Fest being a 2 week supercard, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty transparent. So if the biggest match that you're going to have that's supposed to draw viewers away from your competition is spoiled, I can see enough. Like you'd have to be panicked, but I can see that panic driving them to change it. But here's the thing, too. Like the moment that we're going to talk about is being probably the biggest moment in tape delay history in wrestling. There was a big main event that was spoiled, and then it actually was like the turning point of the Monday Night War.
And so it totally backfired.
So can you? How shocked would you be if this week, in the ratings, like NXT, like really beats AEW because people are intrigued about if this
people
if the
are
spoiled thing is going to happen?
Expecting this, yeah,
yeah, or because they like the spoiled thing and want to see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a possibility, but, I don't know, man.
It's gonna be up against
real tough to gauge that nowadays.
What's the main event of Fighter Fest Night 2 going to be?
Is it
Moxley and Cage?
Well, it's,
or did
it's
that already
not,
happen?
it was supposed to be Moxley versus Cage.
Yeah,
but
with COVID.
That has been delayed 2 weeks, most likely because of Renee's COVID diagnosis.
Yeah, sorry if we're spoiling this for people, but Renee Young and John Moxley are married.
Yes. but so that has actually been delayed, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. It's going to be happening I think Fight for the Fallen. I think they're doing that again. That's happening then. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't know what the
I'm looking now
this week is going to be.
The three matches that in theory could like be the main event match, I think, are either Jericho versus Orange Cassidy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one.
FTR and the Young Bucks versus Butcher and Blade and Lucha Bros, or Kenny and Hangman versus Private Party. It seems like it's
for the belts.
Yes.
Oh, really? How about defense that quickly? Okay.
I think that they're filling in for like I think there was
for
another
what
attack
should
match
have been Moxie
that was
Cage.
That was announced and then they replaced it.
Okay. Honestly, I would love for Jericho Cassidy to be the main event.
I think that makes the most sense.
I'm genuinely excited for that.
If you're trying to counter programming now, and you're trying to keep people on AEW, I feel like that is the match that makes the most sense to stop people from going over. Because we have to remember that, again, in this moment we're going to talk about in a second, that wasn't Goldberg versus like Nash or Hogan for the title the main event that people switched away from. I think it was the finger poke at Doom, honestly.
Oh my god, no.
Yes, it was the finger poke at Doom. So Nash versus Hogan for the WCW heavyweight title was what was up against Mankind.
If they didn't switch channels like before that, the second the poke happened, I bet you they did.
Yeah. So I guess don't have a stupid finish and maybe they'll be okay. I'm actually excited. I know I just said how hard I'm going to have a time of watching WWE programming, but I'm definitely going to check to see if the same ending happens or not tonight when you're listening to this. So I guess we should talk about now where some of these famous tape delay moments in pro wrestling. Should we start with this one we're talking about?
We might as well. So this was arguably the biggest instance of a pre-tape fiasco, I guess you could say. So this happened back in the Attitude Era. This was right in the middle of the Monday Night Wars between WWF and WCW at the time. And this was where...
I can give you an exact date. It was January 4th, 1999.
January 4th, 1999. Mm-hmm. It's, I guess, that would have been like right in the middle, the height of the Monday Night Wars. But this was a major turning point because... I'll let you go and explain what happens.
Well, the thing, as we mentioned, Raw was live 1 week, taped 1 week. And the week that it was taped was a week where Mick Foley as Mankind was going to beat The Rock on Monday Night Raw to win his first WWE championship, right?
Yes.
So this huge moment where all the major storylines in Raw are tied into this thing. And this huge thing is going to happen on a taped week. I don't know why they decided to do it on a taped week
to begin
with. Like, but they did. And the
even if Bischoff didn't spoil it, like technically about 15,000 people knew.
Yeah. Eric Bischoff, who was running WCW at the time, had made a tactical decision because they were live every week that he was going to read on air at the beginning of Nitro what was going to happen on Raw so that people didn't have to, in theory, didn't have to go watch it. And he, this was a shrewd tactical decision because them being live, he knew that WWE couldn't do it back to him. And for the most part, it seemed like something that was working. Or I mean, maybe just like WCW's programming was working. But people thought, you know, okay, this is working because the ratings are going great. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that saying like, oh man, Mick Foley is going to win their world title, that's going to put butts in the seats. That
Make
was
sure
something,
you keep it here, folks.
Yeah, that was something that
they did not.
They didn't anticipate that that's exactly what people wanted to see. I mean, I'm trying to think of like a good comp. Do you think it's fair to say like had Kofi Kingston won the title on Raw, his first title on Raw, and they were like, hey, don't tune in there because mid-carder Kofi Kingston is going to win the championship. Like people would have flocked to it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the bigger misstep from WCW's part is, and I don't know how, but like I think they didn't realize like the position that Mick Foley, Mankind, held for the fan base. He was kind of, you know, like a sillier sort of wrestler, not taken seriously in terms of like being a world champion, but He was an underdog character. He was a fan favorite. People loved Mick Foley, and that it was very much equivalent to this to the Kofi metaphor of like, oh, this guy who we all really like and would love to actually get a chance at the world championship is going to win it. Please let me view that.
Yeah, I don't understand how WCW didn't realize that that was something people were going to want to see. I mean, they tried, maybe they did, and then they advised Tony Schiavone on commentary to make it sound as unappealing as possible. But I feel like maybe the better thing that night is just not to say that that's going to happen.
And I mean, history has proven it. This was leading up, the historical factor here is leading up to this, WCW had been winning the Monday Night Wars every single night in the ratings, and then this night was the turning point after they made this announcement and everyone switched the channel. The turning point of the Monday Night Wars.
No one came back.
Exactly, they never came back from it.
Yeah.
So it was arguably the worst decision that company has ever made.
There's also been other notable things that happened that only could happen because of pre-taping. This isn't really all that important. It's just, it was another shrewd move by WCW, and just kind of a fun tidbit is that because of the 2 week nature of WWF and wrestler Rick Rude's week to week contract at that point, that he was able to appear simultaneously on Raw and Nitro in the same week on November 17th, 1997, which is kind of cool. You also, without pre-tape, you wouldn't be able to have kind of the beginning of the cinematic era of wrestling that we've all come to enjoy. Like the I think of the halftime empty arena match, with The Rock versus Mankind during the Super Bowl. It was the halftime heat. That is, I think, a really ingenious thing that I know that they did it again.
They did it, I think, about 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think they should do that every year.
It's arguably a great idea because the number of people who tune in to watch the Super Bowl to be fair, like, the Super Bowl halftime show is usually like a major viewing point for a lot of people watching, but also there's some people who would love to watch some wrestling at that time, I guess.
I think it's fair to say that the demographics that the Super Bowl tries to hit with whoever is performing at the halftime show doesn't always usually overlap with people who would rather watch wrestling during that time, you know?
Yes.
So I think that's a market that's out there. You also wouldn't be able to have risky... If you do pre-tapes, you can be more risky because of the safety net of editing. So, like, having Degeneration X try to invade Nitro, I mean, if it had gone really badly and they had, you know, WCW wrestlers had come out and kicked their ass, then you just, you never show that tape. You know? There are plenty of times where this should have been the logic used. One time that it was not used, and this is probably the second most impactful moment of pre-taping in wrestling, is the July 4th, 2005 edition of SmackDown. We've talked about this briefly on the show before, where the character Muhammad Hassan,
one of the most problematic characters.
He was an Islamic character who was a villain for talking about how much racism sucks, which doesn't make sense. He was taped on a Tuesday when they taped SmackDown, doing a angle where he summons like hooded terrorists to help him beat up the Undertaker and then carry out Daivari as like a martyr. And then on Wednesday, the London bombings happen. And then on Friday, they don't change the tape and this episode airs.
Yes.
How possibly, like, do you think just no one had the idea to say like, hey, maybe we should cut this angle out?
Well, you would think that, you know, there would have been some sort of, you know, second or third guy to check what goes on air on that television network. But I guess not. And so, yeah, this happened. I when I was reading up on it, they said that without like sufficient time to like properly edit the segment out of the show, because I guess like it was a pretty large segment with like two of their major characters at the time, UPN, which was the network which SmackDown was on at the time, just showed the unedited footage in what was it, was the in the United States and in Canada. It showed the unedited footage
on Sky,
with an advisory warning, like shown several times, like. I guess the advisory warning must have been like, hey, you're about to see some messed up stuff.
Yeah. But... Can I tell you why I think that didn't work in this particular case? Because it caused enough outrage for UPN to say, like, you have to kill off this character.
Right.
And they did. And, like, this person they invested all this time in was just gone from television. And the company. I think they're like, okay, well, there's something insensitive, but it's like 30 minutes of our show and it's the last segment, so we don't want to like retape it. Let's just put a parental advisory on. The problem is that I imagine that they were at the advisory was at the top of the show and this segment was at the end of the show.
An hour and a half later. Yeah.
And even if it was like shown at the coming back from the last commercial break before the segment, this is still, it's probably like a 20-minute segment, and this is the last thing that happens in it. So it's very conceivable that people just are flipping through the channels and like come onto it. Or like, I don't know what SmackDown led into on the UPN network at that time. I don't know, just like reruns of like the Parkers, but like.
I was going to say the Martin show.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, is it like, how horrified would you be trying to watch your UPN like faith-based, family-friendly sitcoms,
family and, comedy,
and then like this is the final thing you see going into it, and I just can't.
It didn't go well.
What a confluence of events. So
yeah,
it does seem that like pre-taping, the positive of it is that you should be able to avoid PR disasters like this.
Yeah.
playing devil's advocate, I know we talked about how hard it is to watch wrestling right now, but there have been positives and forced innovation in pre-taping, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And with empty arena. But I think pre-taping has been pretty prevalent for a while now.
Yeah.
Are there benefits for shows like NXT or other WWE properties to go back to pre-taping full-time after COVID has passed? Can you see a world where that's positive?
In a post-COVID, mm-hmm. again, with given, like, you know, with social media and like how things work in 2020, it's a positive negative aspect. And I think doing a full pre-tape show nowadays, you're gonna get spoilers. But also, to be fair, even with live shows now, like if you're not watching it live and you plan to, you know, I'm going to catch it tomorrow night or the night after, like then you're going to have to probably actively avoid spoilers for the next 48 hours because they're going to be available whether you want them or not. So I think there's a positive and a negative to it. I honestly like pre-tapes. Generally I do, because with the magic of editing, you know, you can fix any issues you may have, any botches that may happen in the ring or something. You can either edit around them or you can edit them out entirely if needed. Just, you know, some, maybe a promo just like dragged on and went really long and got weird and awkward. Like maybe you can edit that down to make it a little more palpable.
Add in a laugh track.
Yeah. Add in a laugh track if you need to. So, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. I think I could not see a world where wrestling goes fully pre-taped. There's something to be said about the live experience. So
mm-hmm. I can tell you that I watched more episodes of NXT UK, the Cruiserweight Classic, the Mae Young Classic. I watched mm-hmm. way more of those when they were pre-taped, and I had heard like, hey, on this week there's going to be like a banger of a match.
Yeah,
like that was enough to get me to be like, oh, okay, I'll watch it this week. Mm-hmm. Because I think it is still the problem, and it's evident that when WWE has 8 different shows that it points to that you have to watch, that you have a small part of the WWE fan base that will watch all of them, but then you may turn off people. You may give people too many options that they don't watch anything. It's like being like, let's watch a movie on Netflix tonight, and then you spend an hour just scrolling through stuff and you don't actually
find the movie.
And you're like, what the hell happened? That's kind of that's kind of what WWE programming's like amount of content, of new content, kind of feels like. So if you tell me, you know, hey, the AJ Styles Daniel Bryan IC title match was really, really good pre-taped, like, okay, I will make it a point to watch that. So I could see, I think if NXT wasn't up against Dynamite every week, I think that they still would have kept it taped. Yeah. And I think that would have worked.
I mean I definitely agree. I much more enjoyed NXT when it was an hour long pre-tape every week. But also, again, that's just it. That could be speak to the different roster that they had at the time.
Yeah,
not
that's
again
true.
Not having to compete with AEW. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if there will be some that go back to being pre-taped, or if there will be kind of a hybrid mix going on from now, where like you could mm-hmm. do more stuff that is on a closed set NDAs all around.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see.
We shall see.
So we've got time for one more segment in the show. It's a segment we haven't done in a while, but the Kayfabe 520, you've had a lot of time to work on it since you've been working from home.
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah.
We had a lot of time to work on this. And again, I'll repeat, we have fully sanitized and deloused this thing from top to bottom. So
mm-hmm.
we are good to go.
Wonderful.
But again, we did have to expand it a little bit to adhere to social distancing aspects, so I'm going to need you to keep 6 feet apart while we're inside.
I'll step behind this plexiglass here, and I have my mask mm-hmm. on.
Perfect, perfect. Yeah,
so I'm ready to go if you are, if you want to flip the switch.
Let's hop right in.
Oh, I just got like sprayed in the face by some hand sanitizer. I didn't even see where that came from, but that's a nice addition.
Sorry. That was the face sanitizer. We have separate ones. If you move your hands down there you go. You'll see. Yeah, that's the hand sanitizer one.
Yeah, I wonder where else I'm gonna get sprayed during this. I guess we'll see.
Surprise.
So do you want to answer the first one, or do you want to ask the first one? It's operator's choice.
Well, I think, you know, I'll go ahead and kick us off here.
Great.
Andrew, an NXT wrestler, posted a photo of the ending of tonight's NXT championship match,
mm-hmm.
but that was like weeks ago. How's that even possible?
You know, I think I don't know much about this particular wrestler because we haven't seen them on TV yet.
Sure.
What I'm assuming is that like other mythical wrestlers before him, that he has some sort of premonition power,
mm-hmm.
and that he can see the future. He's kind of like the Doctor Strange of the wrestling world,
Ooh,
I think, and
okay.
that he can like manipulate time or see different outcomes. And
okay.
this is like, he looked at all, you know, 7,853 possible outcomes from the title match on NXT Great American Bash 2020 Night 2. And he was like, this is the one. This is the one this is the one where Thanos doesn't win. So he
okay, yeah.
So he made a premonition about it, and then you know, because of the world we live in, he just had to put it on Insta. So
I mean, you got to do it for the Insta.
Yeah, he had to get
the
likes.
That is true, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm. I got a question for you. The
right.
Dark Order in AEW. Has been targeting more and more talents as of late to join them. What would be your pitch to get people to join?
Okay. Well, you see, the Dark Order, they've certainly been increasing their numbers as of late, and honestly, they've been pulling some pretty notable people, some pretty upstanding people, if you ask me. Colt Cabana is, in my mind, has always been a real stand-up guy. He's the kind of guy you're gonna let you know.
And
let
he
you
does
drive,
stand
drive
up?
You home.
Yeah.
he's the guy you introduced to mom. But yeah, so Colt Cabana seems to be, you know, joining the Dark Order perhaps. And I think, you know, I like to think that they do have a pretty good pitch at this point if they can get someone of that caliber. I think, you know, maybe they're letting these guys know that in the Dark Order, not only are you going to have, you know, the resources available to you to help, you know, further your career, maybe help you get some wins, but maybe they have a really good benefits package. You know,
yeah.
I'd like to see what kind of insurance that the Dark Order is offering available, what their
mm-hmm.
deductible looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe they have some investment options.
Oh, I like that. Do you think they have like up to like a 5% corporate match?
I mean, I would certainly like to see it. It depends, you know. Though Mr. Brody Lee seems like a pretty giving boss, so it's possible.
Yeah, I just like that the members of the Dark Order are encouraged to wear masks.
Exactly. See,
yeah.
And they're conscientious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got their pulse is on point with the world at large.
Yes, absolutely. But I got a question for you though, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of shifting gears here. You know, a big name who we actually haven't heard from a really long time
mm-hmm.
is the Big Dog himself,
oh, yeah.
Roman Reigns. What do you think Roman's been doing all this time?
I feel like if he's been anything like all of us, he's been trying to pick up a new hobby.
Sure.
With all
yeah.
of this time that he has off and indoors.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he probably has gotten into woodworking. He just seems like someone who would be into carpentry
okay.
as a whole. Maybe he's making like a big dog house out of wood right
Ooh,
now.
I like that.
I could see him doing that. I could see him, you know, like being like, I'm going to go to the garage and cut some lumber.
Mm-hmm.
I just have this image, like, if I walked up to like a roadside antique shop and Roman Reigns was out there like sanding a table, that wouldn't shock me at all.
maybe Nick Offerman's in the back also working on a canoe or something.
Yeah, they're building a canoe. That's exactly what's exactly what's going on, I think. Yeah.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Now that Randy Orton, and Edge have had the greatest wrestling match ever, the greatest wrestling match of all time, what should they do next to try and top it?
Oh, man. You know, it's a huge career achievement to have put on the greatest wrestling match of all time. Look, Orton and Edge are both extremely talented guys. We know they're capable of a lot of physical achievements and things like that. Honestly, you know, I'd like to see them, you know, kind of spread their wings, maybe branch out into some more of the arts. I'd like to see some of the acting chops maybe that Orton and Edge have. I'm kind of leaning towards maybe a buddy cop movie, something along that line.
I thought you were going to ask if Edge can get Randy Orton on Vikings. Assuming that show is still in production. I don't know if it is.
Yeah, I don't know if Haven is still happening, but maybe Edge has got some ins there.
I promise you Haven is not still happening.
But yeah, I think a good buddy cop buddy cop movie for Orton and Edge could be great.
Would it be rated R?
It would be rated RKO.
Yeah. Why haven't an appendix to that question? Why haven't Randy Orton and Kevin Owens had a tag team called Rated RKO 2?
Oh man, I think we really need that in our lives.
I actually think that's a good idea.
That's a great idea. Oh man, but you know what is also a great idea, Andrew? Mm-hmm. And I'm a proponent of this. Well, it's following the rules. Oh. There are some people who I know who are all about the rules. That's FTR.
Is that what FTR stands for, is following the rules?
It very well could be, because FTR has been extremely critical about the enforcement of tag team rules in AEW, as you know.
Yeah.
Now, could they possibly borrow ideas from officiating in other sports to keep the contest fair?
Ooh.
Like yellow cards, red cards in soccer, foul shots in basketball.
Ooh, this is a really interesting can of worms to open. I like the idea of yellow cards. You can have multiple infractions, but like if you get one that's like really serious, you get the red card and you have to leave, and I guess you miss the next match as well, so like you could really hurt your tag team member because they're gonna be down
you rake the eyes, that's a yellow card.
Yeah, and if you do it again, it's a red card. I mean, if you slide tackle someone from behind, I guess that's actually legal in a wrestling match.
That might be legal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of a penalty box, maybe.
Oh yeah, I feel like that happened in TNA for a while, that there were penalty boxes in matches. I think that was a part of the King of the Mountain match, that you would get pinned and be put in the penalty box for five minutes.
Penalty box. Okay.
But like, I like the idea that like, you know, you can have two people, maybe like a person from each member of a tag team are sent to the penalty box, and it's like, are they going to fight in the penalty box? Who knows? The foul shot would be harder to do, I guess, like that, or like a penalty kick is like, if you do an infraction, like if someone is, if we beat up someone else in the other tag team, we hit our finisher and you are about to pin them and it's clear that they're going to be down for the three, and then the other tag team member like hops in the ring without a tag and breaks it up, like that's a clear like pinfall denying opportunity. So will we get a penalty kick where we just like get a free kick on the other person? Maybe. I think we're almost onto something smart here.
I think so.
We'll work this out. We can find a way to do it. Last question before we gotta get out of here. According to The Last Ride, it appears that The Undertaker is retired for real this time, for real.
Okay.
What should The Undertaker do with his new chapter of his life?
New chapter of his life. So you see, that's kind of an oxymoron right there, because I would argue, what is The Undertaker going to do with his new life? being that Undertaker has seemed to be a live man again, which is, mm-hmm. is certainly not the Undertaker that I'm used to. Now, I mean, I'm not sure what, you know, pact he might have made with the devil or some kind of witch to grant himself a soul again, but hey, I'm all for it. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that, you know, now he can finally pursue maybe things, you know, the Undertaker's always wanted to do. You know, have a social media presence or mm-hmm. build a sweet garage gym.
Ooh. Do you think he will like work as a working Undertaker now? I guess he did that for a while at the beginning.
I mean,
he did that
for a while, yeah. And I honestly wonder how the lack of some, you know, supernatural powers is going to make that job a little more difficult.
Do you think?
I mean, you got to actually dig the holes, and I can't even get into the embalming process.
Yeah, him as a mortal would be like, oh, I don't like this job.
this is very tiring.
Yeah, you know.
I'm clocking out at 5 to go rest in peace.
Do you think he'll do a lot of puzzles because he likes resting and pieces?
Ooh, okay, okay.
I'll see myself out.
I see what you did there.
All right.
Well.
I see that there is a bit of dust now piling up in my little section here.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like the plexiglass wall is starting to come undone. Some screws are popping out. So I'm afraid that we might become too distant or too close, I guess,
too
here
close,
in a second.
Yes.
Could we possibly get out of here?
Absolutely, yeah, because you got to adhere to that six feet. So mm-hmm. let's go ahead and hop out. You go ahead first. I will follow you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Put that cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it.
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
I slammed out.
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh, my God.
That was a really... really great experience in the KFA 520, Tyler. Yeah, like
absolutely.
The updates you did until they all fell apart.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. That's how it goes.
Yeah, things fall apart. So this is all the time we had for this episode. Mm-hmm. Do we have anything we want to plug or encourage people maybe to watch? Because we're almost out of new live TV except for wrestling, apparently. So
that's
like are there recommendations you have that people should be watching?
If I can make a recommendation right now, I have two major ones. My number one, and this is for anyone across the board, I highly recommend downloading Disney Plus to view Hamilton.
Oh god, it was really good.
It is excellent, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess as theater people, we should be saying that like people should absolutely be watching Hamilton.
Yes, I highly recommend it as a theater lover. If you like musicals, if you don't like musicals, you're probably gonna like this. Mm-hmm. I'm not the biggest musical fan myself, but it is a blast.
Can I tell you my experience with this too? Because I don't know if we had the same one. I have a rule, and I know some other people have this rule, that with Broadway musicals that mm-hmm. I don't listen to soundtracks of shows until I see them.
Okay.
Like with like newer shows, like in theory, like I should have an opportunity to see shows, although Hamilton, like it's so hard to get tickets but like I try not to listen to the music before I see shows. So I was really expecting the music in Hamilton to be like half rap and half mm-hmm. like classical show tune.
Yeah.
And I was shocked that the songs that are not like rap heavy in Hamilton are like mm-hmm. very like classic pop.
Yeah, yeah. There's a different feel to them definitely than, you know, watching Wicked or something like that.
Yeah. Like King George's song is like that is such a like pop banger.
Yeah.
Like it really it's really really good.
It's super catchy.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was very good, very enjoyable. I'm kind of like sort of the same mindset as you, where so Sarah and I were lucky enough to see Hamilton live when it was touring. They came to Richmond,
mm-hmm.
and we got tickets and we got to see it. It was not the original cast. I think it might have been the second or third iteration of the cast
of the touring company.
It was still incredible.
Yeah.
But so of course, leading up to this, like the weeks before, Sarah is just has the Hamilton soundtrack on repeat, on repeat. Mm-hmm. And my biggest gripe, I said to her, how can you listen to, like, be singing the songs and listen to the music and stuff? You haven't even seen the play. Like, you don't know necessarily the context to it.
Well, to be fair, in Hamilton, I feel there's, like, 10 lines that are not part of a song. Well,
yeah. I found that later, like, when we got to the show. And I think she strategically made a point not to tell me, because I'm not the biggest fan of musicals. I think she just strategically made a point to be like, this literally is going to be, like, 2.5 hours of singing and maybe a sentence of dialogue.
Yeah,
I was like, huh, okay, here we go. But again, it was incredible. The Disney Plus version is very good. Yeah. I highly recommend watching it.
That's kind of like this. I'm going to tell a story that maybe we'll cut, maybe we won't. Yeah. I like the idea of you being dragged to multiple plays where people withhold information about what you're about to see. Do you know what I'm about to say? there was when Tyler and I were in a show that I wrote a few years back in New York for a festival, that there was another show in the festival I wanted to see, and I made Tyler go see it with me, and I didn't tell him that the like entire premise of the show revolved around like two males being fully nude for most of the show. We were we sat like three rows away from the stage, and I didn't tell you this at all. That was really fun. I had a very good time knowing what was about to happen and knowing that you didn't know.
Did you have a great time just from like withholding information or was it?
I remember curious about
the artistic vision they have here.
Yeah. I remembered liking that show, and I remember reading the premise and thinking, that show sounds really interesting. I think that I talked to one of the people before we went, and they were like, oh, there's a lot of nudity in it. I was like, oh, okay. And like, I didn't know that what this person was telling me is like, I am nude in this show the entire time.
I kind of like this idea for a series of take Tyler to the show he doesn't know much about.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Go ahead.
No, you were gonna say.
I was gonna wrap it around to my second recommendation, but
go for it
if you have something to follow up. So my second recommendation for anyone who has, I don't know if this is available on, you know, a normal app device or something, but if you got a PlayStation or an Xbox or something, I highly recommend getting the Pluto TV app.
Yeah, you can get it on a Roku too.
Specifically for wrestling fans. They have some old school Impact, which to be fair isn't always great, but it's always available. They have some
it's always interesting
AAA promotions, which is just bonkers. and actually what I've been I just found recently is actually really cool. It's on the Fight Channel, which I think they do everything from boxing to UFC and everything.
Yeah.
But specifically right now it is airing a program that is called The Glory Days of Wrestling. And it's just like a bunch of very classic matches. I think I just watched Buddy Rogers versus some guy in full
the original
black and
Nature
white.
Boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Watching Jerry Lawler versus Randy Savage right now.
Ooh. Is that from like Memphis Championship Wrestling?
It looks like it. It's very dated, definitely 80s, maybe earlier. And in the most like haphazard looking cage, like you can see the like rope that is holding the cage together. Like, it's just weird.
That's awesome. I'm gonna give one recommendation before we get out of here. This was my favorite television show of last year. No one watched it. It got canceled. The perfect television show for dealing with a crisis and finding hope and optimism in the face of economic unrest.
Yes, give it to me.
It is the most delightful, weird show that no one watched and everyone should have, and it's called Lodge 49. It was on AMC. It was a really hard show to market, and you can now watch all of it on Hulu, I believe. It's two seasons. It is kind of like if you dropped the Big Lebowski as a character into Twin Peaks. That is kind of the idea. But it is so much about finding optimism in death and losing mm-hmm. your job. So I think this is the perfect show for people to watch writ right large now, right yeah. now. So I can't recommend Lodge 49 enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You will not be disappointed. It's weird, but it's really good. So we're going to play.
That's Andrew's go-to for a lot of things. Look, it's yeah. weird, but it's really good.
It's just, oh, I can't. If you end up watching it, let me know, because it's like,
yeah,
it's got Kurt Russell's son is the lead actor mm-hmm. in it. The guy who's in, he's in Black Mirror, and he was in Overlord, that action movie about Nazi black magic.
Yeah.
It's really good. So a reminder as well, if you want us to answer your questions in the Kayfabe 520, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or on our Facebook page, muchadowaboutwrestling, or you can email them to us directly, muchadowrestling@gmail.com. And as always, we will leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
And just put a mask on, guys.
Please. Yes, please, for the love of God.
Thank you.